Good morning, New Mexico, and welcome to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. We're broadcasting live from the Santa Fe Baking Company on Cordova Road and streaming on the web at ksfr.org. We're also podcasting. The website is santafe.radiocafe.org, where you can listen to the show anytime you want, thanks to Santa Fe's .foil computer services. And you can also subscribe to the show on iTunes. Later in the program, we're going to be speaking with the folks from the play Master Harold and the Boys, which is opening this weekend at El Museo Cultural. And we're going to be speaking to vocalist, singer, songwriter, composer Angela Bivens. Right now, ladies and gentlemen, it is the first Wednesday of the month, and I would like to introduce Bill Hutchison. He is our regular guest. He's with the Santa Fe Animal Shelter and Humane Society, and I'm delighted to welcome back Bridget Lindquist from the Española Valley Humane Society. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen.
Good morning, Mary Shelley. You know what I learned about 60 seconds ago?
What?
That Bridget can dance during your theme music.
Oh, dear God.
She has good rhythm. I don't have any rhythm.
I rely so much on the fact that radio is not a visual medium. Thank
you. So do I.
I know, but next time we'll have the webcam and we'll show, we'll have it sort of at hip level when
Bridget
is on next.
She got funky for about 5 seconds. Didn't miss a beat.
It was so true. We're here to talk about the cat crisis. Is it really a crisis? What's the nature of the crisis?
It is absolutely a crisis. What's the nature of the crisis, Bridget?
Unquestionably, we have 26% more cats this year than we did last year this time. And that means in the month of December, local shelters and rescues are putting in an extra effort to place as many cats as possible.
We're going to have to use the whole month to try and get behind this. And even then, I'm not totally convinced that we're going to knock the problem out. Obviously, we're not going to knock the problem out. Shelters are crowded, and our usual options of transferring them to other shelters or rescue groups, that's not there anymore. Those organizations are as full up as we are.
Why so many cats?
It's a million-dollar question. I think if we knew the answer to that, we'd be in good shape.
We'd have $1 million.
It's a combination of lack of spay-neuter. I have heard a number of smart people say, it is a national problem right now, a number of smart people say that it might have something to do with global warming.
Well, that's what I was wondering, too.
Those temperature shifts make a difference, but I don't know.
Well, I'd like to think my animal control officers are being more proactive, but that may not be the case. It's year one of a potential trend. I think it's too early to speculate. We've observed 10 years of sort of a consistent surrender numbers, and this year's aberrant. For whatever reason.
Now, how can animal control officers catch a cat?
Corralling into a trap is typically the way it's done.
They use a lot of helicopters, net guns, things like that.
Cats are tricky.
Night vision goggles, sonar, armored vehicles.
It's hard to catch a small dog, much less a cat, which is a lot faster than you.
Both Española and Santa Fe have some pretty capable animal control officers, and they use a combination of traps and sometimes they can actually pick a cat up, believe it or not. Some of them are really good with animals, but trapping a cat is often the safest way to do it for both the animal control officer and the animal.
So do you have in your respective shelters a lot of kittens, a lot of grown cats, feral cats, cats that were once in homes and for some reason are no longer?
The answer is yes.
To all of this?
Yes, that's right. Most recently to an adopt-a-thon, we brought down 8 cats between the ages of 8 weeks and 6 months because we're trying to pitch the cute little fuzzies. And it turns out that most of the people visiting that adopt-a-thon were more interested in puppies than kittens.
Can't blame them.
Well,
Mary Charlotte, bite thy tongue.
I'm sorry. We're here to talk about cats, ladies and gentlemen. Cute, fuzzy felines.
Some of this trend has been much more prominent for several years on the West Coast. A lot of California shelters have seen the winters producing more intake in cats than they ever had. And we ran some numbers recently and found that in the cooler months, over the last couple of years, we've been up 250% with intake versus the years before that. That means we're getting 250% more cats, 2.5 times the number of cats between October and February. And I know that not very many of our listeners are cats because of your unmitigated bias against them, but I think that they...
That's not entirely true.
Well, and because of cats' inability to listen to radio by themselves.
True.
Yeah, have you ever seen that cartoon, What Cats Hear? It's just a blank, thought bubble on the cartoon.
I think that's very true. But they're not stopping. They apparently have forgotten that in the cool months it's time to chill out and not breed, and they're not breeding. It's going crazy, and as Bridget said, it's kittens, it's older cats, it's middle-aged cats, it's younger cats, it's middle-class cats, it's upper-class cats. They're all over the place.
And the attributes, come on.
They and it's homeless cats. I mean, that's the problem.
Well, they don't need to be walked, right? They
it's
take
true.
Care of the bathroom on their own.
Absolutely.
You can have more than one and not even realize that many animals are running around the house.
You didn't need the nice things that they pushed off the counters anyway.
Uh-huh.
I mean, really, we're a pretty materialist culture, let's
they
be honest.
They don't chew your shoes.
They don't. They
That's
don't.
That's right. That's right. Granted, they may not cuddle as much, but, you know, cuddling's overrated.
But some cats do.
True.
Some cats are real comfort cuddle cats.
I have a hugger, but he's big, and so I'm scared not to hug him when he wants a hug.
And he has claws.
He does.
He hugs you with... How does that work?
He really, honestly, he stands up on his hind legs and put his arms around my neck. I swear to God, it's true.
While but, you're standing?
And
then does
he's
dig
on a counter,
his...
and I'm he's big. I'm serious. He's big.
Does he dig his claws into the flesh at the back of your neck,
affectionately,
Bill?
But bloodily, yes. Yes.
Are you doing your job right now?
I was just going
to
say.
I love my cat. I think he's a fantastic cat. He's the best cat I've ever had.
So basically, we are here to encourage people to, you know, get their children a cat, a kitten for Christmas, to adopt a cat.
I would say that anybody who's looking for a cat, this is the time. We have a lot of avenues, as I mentioned, to send cats when we can't get them adopted. We can move them to other places where they are getting adopted. Well, the reality is now there's more cats than there are adopters, so we need to get some more adopters online. And that means you, Santa Fe, all of northern New Mexico, we need you to come and give a home to these cats. And perhaps it's not the most convenient time in the world. We are moving into the holidays, but the cats aren't working on any calendars. They are not aware that it will inconvenience your holiday plans for them to be homeless right now.
It might not inconvenience your holiday plans, too. It might be wonderful to have a new mammal in the house.
Cats and Christmas trees, everybody knows, that's a dynamite combination.
That's
What am I doing? I'm trying to get them home.
Bill Hutchison, what are you doing? We are here talking to Bill Hutchison and Bridget Lindquist from the Santa Fe and Española Animal Shelter Humane Societies. So how are you dealing with it? I mean, you have all of these cats, and is it like the, you know, overcrowded detention centers where you have many cats sharing one litter box or one house or cage or whatever it is?
Well, in Española, we only have 22 cages to accommodate whoever's brought to us, and we went from about 45 cats surrendered in a month to almost 200 month after month. And the way we reacted to it was by reaching out to the Santa Fe community and asking for more foster homes, and got great feedback. A lot of people responded. Right now, as I talk to you, we have 108 cats in foster care, which means these cats have settled. They've learned to fetch by now. They're ready to go and make a good companion for grandma or grandpa.
Well, I think that's an important point to make, is that when a cat is in foster care, it really becomes... what would you say, more domesticated and more calm, and really becomes a wonderful pet.
Right. Well, and it receives the one-on-one attention that shelter staff don't only always have the time to give, particularly when we're inundated.
Cats have a lot of defense mechanisms, and often when they're in a stressful situation, even a shelter as pretty as the Santa Fe shelter is still a shelter. It's not a home for the cat. And so what Bridget's talking about makes a huge world of difference in getting a cat to a position where it can drop those defense mechanisms and you can actually see its personality at work.
Its personality.
Oh, Mary Charlotte.
Oh, my gosh. You endure this once a month?
I know. We were talking about doing it once a week, but her punniness has just gone out of control.
Listen, you want me to be nice to cats. I'm doing the only thing I know how to do.
That's fair. That's fair. Give us all pause for consideration. Oh.
Can we talk about pussies galore?
Absolutely. We got them. They're all over the place.
Whisker Wonderland. Oh, by the way, we have an Adopt-a-thon plan, do we not? December 29th.
We're going to...
December 29th.
That's right, 4 days after Christmas. Find yourself
and 2 days
compelled
before
to go
New
shopping.
Year's Eve.
Right.
That's right.
Right.
Everybody needs a cat for the new year. I mean, I'll be serious just for a second, which is difficult for all of us, but we can pull it off.
Take your time.
What am I trying to say? On Monday, I was in our cat kennels, and there's an orange cat in there who has this incredible face. He's got a really long nose and these golden eyes that are very piercing.
He's part dachshund.
He is not part dachshund, although I did hear a rumor that he knifed a dachshund in an alley fight a couple years ago, but things are a lot better now. But I'm looking at this cat, and he's looking back at me, and he doesn't break eye contact, and he's kind of doing that winky thing that cats do when they're expressing affection. And I'm thinking, all these cats, you know, I tend to be a dog person myself, so sometimes it helps to remind myself that all these cats are these individual, incredible personalities who want things and like some things over other things and have preferences and make choices and have feelings, actual feelings.
It's because of their past lives.
All eight of them. In fact, they're probably more complex and faceted than dogs are for that reason. But they're these really astonishing creatures that we get to have relationships with. And right now, it's as though, you know, we hear all the time about populations of humans worldwide who are in need of help. And here's the reality. There's this species that we've been living with for tens of thousands of years, and our little pocket of the world right now in Santa Fe, this little population needs our help in a really big way.
What happens if the cat crisis continues unabated?
My guess, more cats. Bridget?
Well, sure, but is she asking how do we
what
react?
Are you going to do with them? I mean, are they going to be euthanized?
God forbid. That's not something any of us want to do. I mean, that's part of why we're here on the radio this morning, because we need to find them homes. That is absolutely the number one best option. Right now, it's the only option any of us really want to look at.
And honestly, it's not a decision we've had to face in our years of operation. But for the first time, yeah, we've had to discuss that topic. We want to avoid it. And the reason why it's so pressing is unless these cats move from foster care to their real homes, we don't have any recourse come kitten season in March.
Now, when that kitten season is in March, so this isn't even kitten season, but it's acting like it.
No, that's kind of the horror of this. This is not kitten season. In fact, this is not only not kitten season, this is like anti-kitten season. This
right.
is when there are no kittens. This is the one time of year where shelter staff throughout northern New Mexico say, normally. But there's no sigh of relief right now, not even remotely coming on the horizon.
There's a rapid intake of breath.
Yeah. Yeah, it's very
So where
scary.
Is this Adopt-a-Thon?
It's at Santa Fe Place, formerly the Via Linda Mall, and it's from 12 to 3, and I think we're billing it as an Adopt-a-Thon and holiday celebration. So if you happen to be a shopper in the vicinity, be prepared to have a little furry friend thrust in your arms.
We're talking to Bridget Lindquist and Bill Hutcherson. Has there been a response so far? I mean, have you had more people coming in to adopt animals?
Truth be told, we have. Actually, we noticed an increase. We average about 53 cat adoptions a month. And last month was a particularly good adoption month for us, partly because what limited energy we have left at the end of the year that's not devoted to raising funds, we've been exerting toward placing cats. So we're showing some return for that investment. But with respect to our organization, we have 100 cats that we need to place now. Before January, and I know Santa Fe Humane's in a similar situation, as is Felines and Friends. The burden is spread about.
So what about the question of feral cats? Are they part of this whole cat crisis equation?
All you have to do is drive down any street in Santa Fe that has a back alley, and you can immediately see that Santa Fe does indeed have a feral cat crisis. And there are a number of ways to address it, but you know, at some point we have to figure out what the heck is going on to both domesticated cats and feral house cats that they're going so crazy and breeding like rabbits. Although rabbits we don't really have a problem with.
No, nor do we. Although now that you've mentioned it on air, I'm certain they'll start surfacing. Thanks, Bill. Thanks for that.
You know, well, animal control doesn't go around trapping rabbits, do they?
We get a number of rabbits from animal control, but mostly they're house rabbits that are on the lamb that somebody calls and says, there's a rabbit on the street.
As opposed to house lambs that are on the rabbit.
Absolutely. Well, lambs do hop a lot. I don't know if you've ever seen them. They're very bouncy.
In the deep grasses. It's like a safari for rabbits. Feral cats are not necessarily contributing to the problem, although that's a epidemic we're experiencing. We practice trap-neuter release. They're brought to us. We spay and neuter them. They're returned to the colony. The beautiful thing about ferals is if they have a healthy, thriving colony, they take care of themselves. They already have a home. What's most critical is that they're returned from the place they were discovered. The hard part about domesticated or socialized cats is they're given up or they're abandoned, and they're just we can't just let them out on the street again.
So, Adopt-a-thon. What other things are you doing? People can come into both animal shelters. If you live closer to Española, you can go there. If you live closer to Santa Fe, you can go here. Or if you live far away, you can go to either one. People can come anytime. Can they walk in, adopt a cat, and walk out the same day? Or do you have to look at their FBI report and their tax return?
Certainly not in
Española. What kind of background checks?
We're not even familiar with those documents. Most of us are beyond the grid. You can come in and adopt a cat the same day you express interest in it. And I imagine many organizations are considering reducing their adoption fees. We're running a two-for-one kind of discount. So for a mere $30, you can walk away with two cats for the month of December.
Santa Fe's in a similar boat. You can walk out with a cat the same day. Promise us that you won't eat the cat
or release
it to coyotes, and you're in good shape. For the month of December, or as long as it takes, we've dropped all of our cat adoption fees to $20. We still want to make sure that, you're not looking for a cat sandwich, but provided that's covered, there are these astonishing cats that you can take home. Something that a lot of folks, I think, don't realize about working in animal welfare is what December means to animal welfare people. December is much like for retailers. This is when we really try and get a lot of the money, a big chunk of the money that we're using to stay open for the next 12 months. So while it's normally a downtime when it comes to animals, our fundraising goes into full bore. Now, what happens when this time that you usually devote to fundraising so that you can care for all the animals that come in is coming up against this nonstop influx of animals that also requires so much of your time and affection and attention? It means that shelter staff is really down to its last couple of drops of energy and go juice. And it's been a really hard time in the shelter environments right now, and that's a huge part of why I think we need our community to help us out. The reality is, we say it time and time again, overpopulation isn't a shelter problem, it's a community problem. And we're doing our best to stay on top of it, but the water is rising, and it's up to our necks, and we really, really need Santa Fe, all of northern New Mexico, to come out in their little boats and pull us out of the water.
That was beautiful.
I'm caught up in that visual metaphor. Thank you.
I know. Shades of Katrina.
You know, in a way, I think for the cats in our community, it very much is sort of a miniature feline Katrina. They are displaced. They're homeless. They don't have anywhere to go. These refugee-style organizations, the shelters, don't have many options for them. And we're desperate. The reality is we're desperate, and we're kind of at a loss. The Santa Fe shelter a couple of weeks ago did a whole week devoted to cats, Crazy About Cats Week. We adopted out over 100 cats. We spayed and neutered 374 in a week. And honestly, I don't know that we made much of a dent. It cleaned us out of cats in our shelter immediately. We had one cat left by the end of that week out of 100 and change. But it filled up almost immediately all over again, and it's terrifying.
Do people come in with their cats and say, I would like to give up my cat? I mean, is that a major way that you get them?
Yes. Yes, yes, and again, yes. Yeah. Often a basket of kittens. One of the things that shelter workers are often a little nervous about the sight of is that tub approaching the door, because
you know
inside there's 4 or 6 or 8 or 12 kittens that are going to join you.
You know, this highlights something. I'm not sure we've ever talked about this before, but the importance of spay-neuter.
Yeah, we should have covered that, Bridget. I can't believe we overlooked that. 3 years of doing this show. Unbelievable.
Well, catch me up on the topic as it's been explored. Spay-neuter would help prevent this problem. I think a proactive spay-neuter campaign needs to be in place 6 to 8 years before we see the impact of that. What's startling to us is in Española, in the broader Rio Riba service area, we've been spaying and neutering like fiends for 12, 13-plus years. And yet it's frustrating because there's no sign that it's giving us relief on the back end.
There was a study done some years ago at a little secluded village in Africa, and this study is touted a lot by animal welfare people as sort of a key to getting a hold of overpopulation, but it also shows you the mammoth task ahead. It takes this community in Africa has lots of stray animals, but it doesn't have a lot more coming in, so it's its own little bubble. So what they discovered by doing this spay-neuter project in this village was that it takes over the course of 6 months, one cycle, you have to spay and neuter 80% of the intact animals in that community to make a dent, to get it to stop or
That's
slow down.
That's a high percentage.
Yeah.
So if we figure the tens of thousands of unaltered animals in northern New Mexico, and that's really what it is, tens of thousands, we need to get 80% of those in a six-month cycle to stop overpopulation. Now, that doesn't mean that we're going to, either of our organizations or any of the very good organizations that are doing a lot of aggressive spay-neuter are going to stop, but it lets you know the size of the task in front of us and the reality of the need for the whole community to come and lend a hand in this, whether it's money or volunteering time or adopting these cats or driving your neighbor who has four unaltered cats to a clinic to get them spayed and neutered. Something has to happen because these cats desperately, desperately need us.
And we do know that it works. For example, in Colorado, we export puppies to Colorado because their spay-neuter programs have been so successful. They actually have a puppy shortage.
That's right.
That could happen with cats, too. But it's going to take a while, and it's going to take a lot of effort.
That's right.
I wouldn't even necessarily call, call Denver's dog and cat issue a shortage so much as, all these other communities. It really is a national issue. So there's one community that has knocked it out that has helped us, certainly, in northern New Mexico and other neighboring communities quite a bit. But what we see are these sort of anomalous communities where they can get a hold of it and help the neighboring communities. But the reality is animal welfare organizations are struggling all over this country to stay on top of it. And there are more ways for animals to stay homeless now because of how many of us there are, how many metropolitan areas there are, how many safe rural areas there are. They're learning to live in these places where they ought not to live. They ought to live inside with us, where they belong.
So the phone number for the Santa Fe Animal Shelter is
983-4309. You can always look at all of our adoptable cats online at www.sfhumanesociety.org.
And the Española Humane Society
is 753-8662. And if you're looking at the cats that are available in our region, go to petharbor.com. That wonderful website automatically draws from our shelter database. So you have a moment-to-moment updated link to who's at the shelter and who needs a home.
Well, Bridget Lindquist and Bill Hutchison, thank you so much for being with us on the Santa Fe Radio Cafe.
Hey, thanks, Mary Charlotte.
And we'll see you in a month. Merry Christmas. Happy New Year.
It's great
thank
seeing you.
Thank you very much.
Hasta la vista. So we're going to take a little break right now, and we will be back talking about the play Master Harold and the Boys. Stay tuned. I'd like now to welcome actor Quinn Armstrong and director Clara Soyster. They are involved in production of the play Master Harold and the Boys, which is a play by Athel Fugard, which is opening at the El Museo Cultural this weekend with a preview performance on Thursday night. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Hi.
Hi.
Great to have you.
Thank you.
This is a stunning play, which I actually saw many, many years ago when it premiered in New Haven, Connecticut. And how did you choose this play? Whose choice was this?
This was Quinn.
Yeah, originally. I read it, actually, for the first time this summer, and then about 3 days after I read it, I put together a little reading with everybody, and it's remarkable because we have the first director we looked at, Clara, immediately said yes because it's a wonderful play.
It's a play by a South African playwright. It takes place in South Africa in the 1950s, and it is, they say, semi-autobiographical. Athel Fugard's first name is actually Harold. He is Master Harold of his childhood memory.
Absolutely.
You play this teenage boy who is a white boy with two friends/servants, black men, in South Africa, one of whom is kind of raising him, and the power dynamics between the two of them and the dynamics of love and hate and so on are really what's order at work at this play.
Yeah, it's remarkable. I mean, you talked about power dynamics. There are quite a few moments in the play that are almost absurd because you do have this little boy talking to these two grown men in a way that you would never in our world see a little boy talking to two grown men. It just wouldn't happen, and it's sort of a wonderful window into that world, and it's not sort of the the demonizing that you often see when you look at apartheid. You get a lot of media that's just, oh, well, that was horrible, but it's all over now.
Right.
Yeah.
And it's also, I mean, it's very complicated. It's there's a lot of love as well as the whole legacy of colonialism and apartheid between Master Harold and these two servants.
Well, the thing that caught me when I heard the first reading of it was the relationships between the boy and the man, and you don't, the apartheid is one piece of it, but there's so many levels. There's the father-son relationship, there's the friends relationship, there's student-teacher relationship, and they're all in there, and there's so much humor on top of pain as well. And that's what really got me, was the levels.
It's a remarkable play, and I have to say, Quinn Armstrong, your acting is absolutely spectacular. You understand this colonialism with British roots and all the mannerisms and gestures and speech patterns that come from that Anglo heritage that we have in this country as well really come out.
Oh, God. I always get very nervous whenever anybody tells me I'm doing a good job in this role, because the role of Hallie is, yeah,
you don't want to be Harold.
Well, it's he's such a teenager. Everyone, this has been an interesting process for me, because I am so alike to Hallie. I mean, it's the thing of being teenage, being young, being a little arrogant, that sort of thing, and we've all been there, and that's the thing about this play, is that it's not showing us, you know, racism in the sense that, ooh, there's a not to
there's the good
racist.
Guys and the yeah. bad guys, right.
This is the only representation I've seen of how an intelligent, compassionate young person can get so turned in on himself and get so knotted up inside that he uses it as an excuse for prejudice and for bigotry.
The point that you make about the arrogance of teenagers, it's sort of wonderful to see that, because there's a way in which when you're 17 or 18 you think you know everything, and then as you get older you realize that you know less and
did
less.
Did I really say that back then? And yeah. I remember yelling at my parents at that age, going, stop calling me a child, because you just...
Because you knew
you
things and
yeah.
you know that they don't.
Absolutely.
But as you say, also, the complexity of emotion that gets knotted up, and the way that... And I think this is a huge point that people come across in their lives all the time. When somebody or something makes them angry, prejudices are more likely to explode.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, and Hallie's anger toward his father is so suppressed, and Sam ends up becoming...
angry at the white father.
Absolutely.
The black Sam yeah. is kind of a father substitute.
Absolutely.
And those loyalties get very confused.
They're completely confused. And Sam knows it. He recognizes it. Hallie doesn't. Because his emotions are just... they take off, and he doesn't even know, I don't think himself, where they come from completely.
We're talking about the play Master Harold and the Boys, which opens at El Museo Cultural on, let's see, Thursday is the preview, and then there is a performance on Saturday night.
Right.
And then Sunday afternoon at 2 o'clock, and then it runs through the 16th of December, Thursdays through Saturdays in the evening,
right.
And then Sunday afternoons at 2 o'clock.
Yeah, the only exception is this Friday. There's
no Friday,
show.
There's no performance.
Right.
So it's a total of, what, seven performances. I have to say, I mean, I would like to command every single person listening right now to go see this play, because I saw the rehearsal last night. It was your first run-through.
Yeah.
My jaw was on the floor. I mean, I was completely riveted. It takes you in, and it doesn't let you go. And it's not one of those things where it's horrible. It's, in fact, that the fact that there is so much love and so much human relationship is what gets you.
Yeah, and I think the audience is like, they're looking into a world. They're the, what do you call it, the fly on the wall.
Yeah.
To this whole little life. It's great.
Dance is a metaphor.
Yes.
Throughout the play
Fred Astaire
as well.
And Ginger Rogers.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And the whole sort of suppressed question of African dance, which isn't even there because you have ballroom dance.
Right.
But dance is a metaphor for all human relationships, political and personal.
And a beautiful speech that Sam has about it. The ballroom dance is all about not bumping into each other. There's no collisions on the dance floor. It's a beautiful world, as opposed to the world outside that ballroom, but that's what they hold to, is that dream of that world.
And then there's the questions that arise about what is art and what is beauty.
Exactly, yeah.
And you have some wonderful speeches, Quinn in the, or Master Harold, Hallie, in the play about that. What was the process of directing this play and rehearsing this play for the two of you? The other two actors aren't here this morning, but...
I've got to say, the toughest part is we had so little time. We literally took this on only maybe, what, 5 weeks ago?
And we started rehearsal maybe 3 or 4 at most.
Yeah, and we haven't had a full rehearsal schedule because the other two actors, Tone Forrest and Tony Buford, are musicians. So they have a very tough schedule, so we fit them in where we could. It's kind of the skin-of-your-teeth theater. And I really just encourage them to just find these characters and go with, you know, push themselves so that I could pull them back rather than find it, you know, experiment, go, and then if it's too much or something's not right, then we'll play with it, and it seems to have worked.
That's a very interesting thing to talk about, going for it and then pulling back, because that edge of restraint is kind of what makes it work.
Good. It's good to hear, And there's moments where you have to feel there's a threat of violence, or there's a threat of something that just could go very wrong against, and that doesn't work unless they're invested in it. Unless, and I know for Quinn it was really tough because he's actually a really nice guy. Oh. And this part, and he has to go to places that are quite horrible. And it was very, very hard for him.
That's good. That's one of the main reasons I wanted to do this play, is that it is about a normal person doing this stuff. It's not about a psychopath, or it's not about a bad man.
Right. And I think that you can find elements of each of those characters, you know, as an audience member within yourself.
Absolutely.
In one way or another.
Yeah, yeah.
Quinn, you just graduated from high school?
2006, yes.
And so, tell us about your own background as an actor.
Well, it's very short.
Yeah. You're so good.
He is. He's got a natural
talent. He's natural.
Talent.
He's very talented.
Sorry, I'm horrible with compliments.
Okay, just say thank you and go on. But you started acting in high school?
Yes, on and off. Well, I didn't really start until my junior year. I decided to get out of Santa Fe. I think I love Santa Fe, but that's a good thing for somebody of that age to do. And I applied to a couple boarding schools, but I ended up sort of on a whim going to an art school in California. And I worked for 2 years at that, and I graduated, and I deferred from college for a couple of years, actually. Traveled a bit, went to Australia for a while, and now I'm back.
And so you are doing theater pretty intensely here in Santa Fe. You did another production earlier in the year?
I've been involved as much as I can, because I think it is... I remember during the college audition process, people kept asking me, well, why don't you just go out and do it? And I never really had a good answer for that. So.
Do you plan to stay with stage, or do you want to do film as well?
Film... I don't like doing film because I don't understand it. It's not a medium that I... It's the sort of thing where if I do a film project, I have to be told where to stand, I have to be told where to look, and that's fine, and there's some great projects, but theater is the medium that I'm interested in, its problems, its potentials. It's really an amazing, it's unlike any other medium of art that we have.
Clara, what about you? Tell us about your life as a director.
Well, I started back in the West Coast in California. Seattle is where I went to school, and then went down to the Bay Area and worked at various companies and started a little company with some other folks called Rough and Tumble. And we focused on cutting-edge comedy. So we would do black comedy. We would find all these obscure theater comedies and work those. And I adapted the history of Tom Jones there, and then I brought it actually to Santa Fe at the Playhouse some years ago. So, and when I came to Santa Fe, I was kind of surprised because I was hoping for more theater, and the only place I could actually direct freelance was the Playhouse at the time. And so it's nice to have this other opportunity at El Museo, and then I'm actually going to guest direct at the College of Santa Fe, February, March, for Living Out. So there's, but theater, I feel the way Quinn does, theater is live. It's, every night you go, it's going to be different. It's not like film. So it's just, it's a medium I love.
And this is such an interesting play because it's three men on stage. The set doesn't change. There's no costume changes. There's no special effects. There's no trapezes. There's not even really lighting changes that I saw. Not much.
Not much.
It's purely the acting, the dialogue, the movement.
Yeah, which it must be frightening for them at moments because they're up there naked and they've got, well, not really naked.
They're not
but
naked.
Emotionally naked. And yeah, they have to hold their own for that hour and 25 minutes, and they do it.
So this is Master Harold and the Boys. It is opening on tomorrow night.
Well, preview tomorrow.
The preview is tomorrow night. And then
so the
Saturday.
The official opening Saturday.
So the official opening is Saturday at 8 in the evening, and then Sunday at 2. And then the next two weekends. The
just
next one weekend.
So, yeah, just 7 shows. So
Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. That's right.
Yeah.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, if you want tickets or reservations or any more information, you can call the following number, 231-3682. That's 231-3682. It's at El Museo Cultural. Quinn Armstrong and Clara Soyster, thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We're going to take a little break right now, and when we come back, we will be speaking to musician Angela Bivens. Stay tuned.
Concert is to...
I'd like now to welcome Angela Bivens. She's a musician, singer, songwriter, and she will be playing tomorrow night in her debut, your Santa Fe debut, at Gig Performance Space at 1808 2nd Street. Welcome.
Hi.
So you have been working for a long time to basically complete your first album.
It's true. It's been about 10 years in the making.
Very interesting. How did you become a, not only singer, but songwriter, composer, and pianist?
I started college in 94, and I would always be singing songs in my head. I kind of thought it was a normal thing, that everybody did it. And then I walked past the music building and saw piano classes, and so I started studying piano in college.
So you'd never studied piano before?
No. Yeah.
And so then when you study piano, that doesn't necessarily mean that you're writing songs, but you had these songs in your head. Did you start playing them as you learned to play?
I did. I started to try to access that. It was a bit frustrating because I didn't have the technical ability to voice what I heard in my head. So over time, just, you know, plowing through it, working at it, creating a relationship with the music and the piano.
And how did you start singing?
I guess I've always been singing since I was a child. But more and more with the... As the piano music developed, the songs came.
And so did you study voice as well in your musical studies?
I did have some vocal classes, yes.
So then you decided to make an album, and that's a process. I mean, they say you have your whole life to make your first album. You have a year to make your second album. Is this material, does this come from a whole lifetime worth of singing songs in your head?
You know, I really started hearing music while I was in college a lot. And what it is for me, it's I'll have an experience, and it's really uncanny how the text will come and it'll be absolutely reflective of what I'm trying to process. And it comes out in melodies, and then the harmonies come. And that's kind of how the song is built. Sometimes I'll wake up and I'll have a word or a phrase in my head, like caveat emptor. What, you know, buyer beware, what is that? And finally, there is a song on this album, and I found a home for that.
Let's listen to a song from your disc. The song is called It's Over. Let's hear it.
into the fire, I realize I can't deny my fear of loneliness. So beautiful this shaping, this carving. Well, I'm still here and coming to this conversation. Here I stand, I am naked with my heart healed.
Angela Bivens here on KSFR, and she will be playing and singing tomorrow night at Gig at 7 in Santa Fe, which is at 1808 2nd Street. Who are your musical influences and specifically your singing influences?
I would say the first influence is Tori Amos. For me, she's really captured story experience in harmonies and melodies that have been congruent to me, with me.
And so, I mean, it's when somebody is your great influence, do you go through this process of imitating them, of singing the way they sing?
I think that when I listen to music, I'm always singing with the artist, and I'm always harmonizing on top of the artist, too. I think it's wonderful if somebody says, wow, you sound like Tori Amos. I think that's great because she is a very accomplished artist and musician.
Now, have you ever played with a band or do you always do solo with piano?
You know, I have not done that yet, but I know that that's coming. And I look forward to that learning experience also. And actually, this concert is to raise funds for the production of the upcoming album, Year of Mirrors.
Uh-huh.
And on the production, I'm going to have some arrangements, and I'll be looking for different musicians.
So what kind of musicians do you want to play with?
Wow, you know, the spectrum is so great. Of course, there's percussion. There may be some guitar, interwoven, bass. There might be some more esoteric or tribal-sounding instrumentation. I'm not sure.
We're talking to Angela Bivens. Now, are you from Santa Fe?
I'm originally from California, but I've been here since 2003.
And what has your relationship been like with the music scene here?
You know, I've really been kind of housed up, quiet, nurturing myself and developing my own relationship so that I can come out and share it.
So this is really your coming out, your debut gig tomorrow night.
Really, it is.
Are you nervous?
A bit. I'm excited. I finally get to do this.
What are the sources for the lyrics of your songs?
Life experiences, really. Different relationships I've had with people, choices I've made in my life, family relationships. For me, I'm pretty amazed at how the text comes, and it's in poetic form, and it's absolutely reflective of the kind of state I'm in or what I need to learn or experience.
And does it help you go through that process of what you need to learn and experience?
Yes, it does. Yeah. I almost have this, when it gets too much, I just have to sit down at the piano. I have to sing something in order to release it.
We're talking to Angela Bivens, and you will be at gig tomorrow night. What else do you want to let our audience know about you and about your work?
Wow. This really is a dream for me. I'm really excited to share it and to have the calling or the gift to be able to take an experience and move it into a creative musical form. And I'm excited to share that with people and so that they can have an experience with it and take it. And
so really nobody's heard you except for maybe your closest friends.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, we look forward to seeing you tomorrow night at GIG, which is a performance space at 1808 2nd Street, and right here in Santa Fe, New Mexico. Angela Bivens, thank you so much for being with us here on the Santa Fe Radio Cafe.
Thanks. Maybe I'll see you at 7:30.
Excellent. Tomorrow night. You've been listening to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. KSFR streams live on the web at ksfr.org. You can email me at radiocafe@ksfr.org or leave a message at 428-1528. We are also podcasting at santafe.radiocafe.org, where you can hear the show anytime you want to, thanks to Santa Fe's .foil computer services, and you can also subscribe to the show on iTunes. Thanks to Laurel Reynolds for engineering today. Stay tuned for the BBC, followed by local news by KSFR's award-winning news team. And after that, Good Morning Jazz with John Greenspan features Women in Jazz. And Giants of Jazz features alto saxophonist Lou Donaldson in the first hour and pianist Claude Williamson in the second hour. Broadcasting live from the Santa Fe Baking Company, my name is Mary Charlotte. Tomorrow, Gary Mex Glazner, the poet and one of the few people who makes a living as a poet, wrote a book about that. And he's left Santa Fe, but he's back, and we will be talking to him tomorrow here on KSFR. So keep your radio dial tuned to 101.1 FM, Santa Fe's only public radio station. Hasta la vista. Ciao.